A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brialso Lake puts this game away!
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes!
Yes! The teams you live for. The sports you love. With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
All right, everybody, welcome on in. It's Unrivaled, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Alex Keery, former NFL quarterback Scott Mitchell to my right. Thanks for being with us on the program. Packed show today, of course, because of the announcement that UFC 278 is coming to Salt Lake. Ryan Smith cracked the mic for the first time, talking not just about that, but also commentary about the coaching search that the Jazz are doing, and also about the possibility of a draft pick on draft night. Even though the Jazz don't have a draft pick, what are they going to do to maybe get one? He chatted about that. If you missed any of those comments, we're going to play a couple of those coming up in just a little while. First, we're going to kick off the hour. We've been chatting, of course, in preparation for BYU's final independence, final media day of football independence, and we're excited about this one because Greg Wrubell, the voice of the Cougars, is going to be joining us on the program right now. Greg, how's it going, my man?
Very, very well. Good to be with you guys.
We're excited about tomorrow. I'm interested to see what the final year of independence for the football media day. I mean, we've been going to all of them since the beginning, and it's just gotten better and better and better, and there's this weird thing where it's like, I know the Big 12 is going to be better, but we don't get this same football media day, maybe some iteration of it going forward. But there's a little part of me that goes, oh, shoot, I'm going to miss that stuff.
It's been a unique setting each year around this time because you have the stage to yourself. All the other media days happen in July. BYU gets out in front of it in June, and it's all about the Cougars. It's no one else to share space with, and that'll, of course, change when they go into the Big 12. But I think it's kind of a cool thing that, you know, through 11 years, 12 media days, they're able to kind of put this phase of the program to bed and get used to being part of a bigger spectacle. And let's consider the fact the Big 12 holds its media day that is actually media days. It's multiple days, and it's held at AT&T Stadium in Arlington, where the Big 12 football championship game is scheduled to be held every year. So they go to the stadium site and hold their media days there. In Arlington, and they do that in mid-July, and so we presume that'll be the case again next year, as it'll be a 14-team conference with Texas and OU sticking around apparently through 2025. So it'll change in a great deal the way that BYU conducts itself at a media day, as opposed to kind of setting up your own parameters to being part of a much bigger deal down in Big D. And some media days, guys, there's a newsworthy element to it. They'll announce schedules. They'll announce, other things that kind of have a resonance. But really, the news to come out of this one will be that it's the final one of the independence era. And it's going to be well attended, too. Upwards of, more than 40 players and coaches will be brought to this event tomorrow. And almost 70 media members have been credentialed for this event tomorrow here at the BYU Broadcasting. My office is in the BYU Broadcasting building, so I'm in the hubbub today.
So much is about going to the Big 12 for BYU, and of course, this being the last media day as an independent. What are you looking forward to about this season, though? What most excites you about what's going to happen this year?
Oh, Jaren Hall, I think if he can find himself, you know, playing every game and staying healthy, which hasn't happened for him yet. You know, he's dealt with having to leave the field and miss a game or two here and there. And if he can have a healthy season and be a 12, 13 game starter for BYU. I'm really eager to see what he could do because even last year, missing a couple of games and playing injured through a lot of the season, he put up some really remarkable numbers that put him in some pretty exclusive company with how efficient he was, how ball secure he was, how productive he was, and ultimately how good a runner he was as well. And so you throw all that together, not too many quarterbacks put together the kind of portfolio he did last year. So I think Jaren Hall excites me most. And then defensively, I think maybe hopefully a return to a little more of an Elisa Tuiaki, Kalani Sitake style of defense numbers-wise. I think they probably gave up a little too much, a little too frequently last year. The offense was good enough to you know, essentially negate any issues they might have had. But let's note, too, that a lot of the issues BYU had defensively were depth-related. They had only two players last year to start every game, and they were both in the secondary. The front seven got really banged up. And so I'm hoping for a little better help, a little better health, beg your pardon, on the defensive side of the ball, because that's been the biggest concern for BYU lately, has been losing guys to season-ending injuries. And you can't overstate how much losing Keenan Peely early last season affected BYU defensively. I think he was primed to have a great year, and the BYU defense looked really solid through two, three games. He went out, and a lot of things took a step back as the Cougars tried to deal with depth issues.
Depth issues are always been such a huge issue to be able to say, hey, BYU's been tremendous when those starting 22 are out there, right? And then there's been that fall off, which is, you know, one of those products of not being in a Power 5 conference. And yet we're already seeing that build up again. How close are they, do you think, kind of coming out in 2023 to have that depth available to be competing right out of the gates in the Big 12?
Well, I think we've already seen, you know, the recruiting resumes look a little beefier, and that will have to continue for BYU. I think last year's Baylor game was a really good bar setter. BYU was a good team last year, but Baylor kind of had its way with the Cougars in the trenches, and that was with a good offensive line for BYU last season too. So I think last year, not a true eye opener, but a good reminder of where you kind of have to need to be to contend at that level in the Big 12, and there's room to grow to that extent. And so I think, you know, with Kalani Sitake primarily, Elisa Tuiaki having been a part of the Utah transition from G5 to P5, they know what it takes, and so they know what kind of has to be done to get to that standard. That I use Baylor as an example, kind of showed them where you need to be, and that was a very, very good top of the pack Baylor team last year in the Big 12. So you are talking about, you know, one of the best. When you talk about Baylor last year, and BYU would have to be, you know, first or second to get themselves into, you know, some pretty nice and prime postseason spots in the future. But obviously the objective is to contend and get yourself back to Arlington to be in that title game at some point and not just be in the mix in the middle of the pack.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.
Is there anything that BYU can do this year that will help in its transition? Or is it just one of those things where you just play out this year and then we just start kind of from ground zero?
No, I think another double-digit win season, another ranked finish, these kinds of things will be a good springboard, because I think everyone wants to see what, when this becomes a 14-team conference next year, just what kind of competition do the four new schools bring? And they've already gotten back-to-back seasons and ranked years. in pretty special 2020 and 2021 campaigns. But I think this is even bigger than the either last two seasons, because this will be the lasting impression that observers have before BYU becomes a Big 12 team.
Greg Wrubell, voice of the Cougars, of course, joining us here on Unrivaled, 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone. Greg, lot of additions in the offseason happens now. Even more so, it gets exciting with the transfer portal. And, of course, BYU already has the return missionary element, too. Of all the names that are on there, I think Christopher Brooks obviously has the tallest order to be able to replace a guy like Tyler Allgeier. And his name comes up so much. But of all the guys you see on that list of, you know, the guys that are coming in, whether it be an offensive lineman or a running back, or what are the names of somebody that you look at and you go, that's one I'm circling here because that's going to be a key part to this BYU success this next year?
Yeah, well, the Cougars return enough guys. Let's note that you know, depending on who you go to for your quote-unquote experience ranks, BYU's a top-five team, whether it's Bill Connolly or Phil Steele or others. BYU's a top-five team in terms of experience, guys back, that is. And last year, you know, they were last or next to last in fewest guys returning. So they've gone from, you know, almost no experience by starts at least, and turning that into a 10-win campaign, to now coming off a 10-win campaign with almost everybody back that matters, with Tyler Allgeier being a notable exception. So BYU's deep enough that there doesn't need to be a ton of new guys have to come in and make a difference for BYU. But of the guys who are new that could make a difference, you can't overlook, you've already talked about him, Chris Brooks, because of the shoes he'll be asked to lace up immediately in Tyler Allgeier leaving the program. P5 back and Chris Brooks comes in. P5 fullback and Houston Haymooley comes in. And then you have another P5, another Pac-12 offensive lineman in Kingsley Suamataya. So I think on the offensive side of the ball, just those three guys alone can bolster a pretty deep offensive BYU team. And where they needed help was at running back. They got it in Brooks, and they add blocking in Haymooley and a very, very good offensive lineman to a BYU O-line that already returns, I think, 109 career starts, guys. So that's strength to strength there for BYU, bringing in Kingsley to a group that has that many starts and that many reps behind them. Coach Tuiaki's D-line already rotates a ton of guys, and I think last year's cast of characters will be more or less the same guys you will see this year. And although he's not a newcomer, Keenan Peely didn't play a lot last year. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of get to see Keenan again and get to be reminded again of what he was for BYU before he went out on the defensive side. And then you look for let's take the SEC transfer in Gabe Judy Lally from Vanderbilt to maybe make a dent on the secondary, which also returns, again, a lot of starts and a lot of reps, primarily from Malik Moore and D'Angelo Mandel. So maybe not a year for the newcomers to be the stars, but I think the fact that they can, you know, bolster what is a very deep team already says a lot about where BYU is right now in that ramp up personnel-wise to be a Big 12 team.
I'll tell you, the more I watch this in the years, that having depth is the key. It really is. To having a really successful year, you just have to have the depth, whether it's to replace guys or to actually keep guys fresh during the year and to be able to be fresh all year long. Especially
absolutely, there was a point last year, just to support your point, you know, they were playing, you know, there was a tryout player who was starting games last year for BYU. you know, that's where things got. We're not talking preferred walk-on, we're talking school starts, we're having tryouts. One of those guys got into the starting lineup and, you know, played decently, but that's where BYU was last year at some points, at some parts of the field. So that's really it. I mean, and that'll ultimately be the biggest differentiator between G5 and P5 programs is what your twos and threes look like. And, you know, yes, it's true there's a next man up mentality, but there's a reason that the next man is the next man, because the guy in front of him is better. And you can't lose too many of the better guys at the non-P5 level without really feeling it. And the objective then is to get more of the next men to be closer to the first men, if you will.
So you've had a lot of time to watch Kalani Sitake grow and mature as a coach, and you talk to him a lot. You've seen him in really good situations, really bad situations. Where do you see that Kalani's made the most growth from when he started at BYU to where he is today?
Well, I think he already started from a pretty strong position to begin with, but first-year head coaches, that's going to be a challenge for anyone. I think his strength lies in, the innate who he is. Because I think Kalani is, as much as anything else, when it comes to tactics and putting together a game plan, he is a vibe. And that can be felt, you know, in fellow coaches and in players 1 through 105 and in recruits and in parents. And when you combine the fact that he has, there's a feeling about the guy. I mean, you probably know him a little bit too, right?
Yeah.
And so there's a genuine, you know, a genuineness of spirit and a true affability and a real sense of love and duty and commitment that all kind of come through him. And then when you add to that, you know, the X's and O's background he has on both sides of the ball, the results that are clearly there, he'll be a 50-win coach a few games into this season in just his seventh season on the sidelines. And he's kind of operating on, and I like to bring it up sometimes, he's kind of operating on a similar pace to Lavelle Edwards when Lavelle took over the BYU program. Now, they took it over at different spots, right? Kalani was taken over for Bronco, who had great success. Lavelle was kind of building from the bottom. But Lavelle's challenges and Kalani's challenges were different. You know, Lavelle wasn't coaching in the independence era. Kalani is, and the schedules look different, and the challenges are different. And so I kind of see how Lavelle's start to his career in terms of number of games and seasons is kind of going almost lockstep with Kalani right now in terms of where they are. And I think, you know, that kind of pace hopefully isn't purely coincidental, because you get a lot of the same feelings about Kalani that you did around Lavelle in terms of someone whose personality and nature and spirit kind of sets a tone for the program. And to the point where Lavelle became an expert delegator, and bringing in remarkable coaches with great schemes while still setting the tone for the program. And Kalani, you know, has clearly, I think, you know, as much of a hands-on approach as any head coach right now, but is able to, I think, occupy that kind of overseer role in a very comfortable way. Let's not forget the fact, too, guys, that Kalani had to make some difficult personnel decisions on his staff within his first couple, three seasons.
Yeah. Which were tough. I mean, that was a hard thing for him to have to do.
Right. And so, you know, to go through that, ride that storm out, and then get positive results from the changes he made, you know, that's a very galvanizing force as well, to see someone that have to go through a bit of a refiner's fire, make some tough calls, and get results on the back end. But I think affixing the P5 label to Kalani and his program has already made a world of a difference. And whether it's in more staffers, different kinds of staffers, the kind of recruiting net they can now cast, the improvements that will come to the program, the exposure in the Big 12, all these things will benefit and ideally kind of bolster a really strong foundation that Kalani has set for this program.
You got to remember, Lavelle coached Alex's father-in-law too.
So, oh, yeah. My father-in-law. Yeah, he's, of course. Yeah. He had to deal
that
with him.
That was a challenge right there in and of itself.
Greg, one of the things, I mean, we looked forward to this media day, and like you were waiting during the state of the program that Tom Holmoe would roll something out, and we'd just cross our fingers sometimes and go, please let it be something that's amazing, you know, in independence. But now, like you said, obviously the big announcement already happened, you know, 9 months ago. And so tomorrow, what are we going to see from Tom Holmoe? Are we going to get an out of conference schedule for BYU in that 2023 season, or what can we expect? Because we still want to make things exciting for tomorrow. What's on the docket?
Right. Well, it is interesting to think about the fact that when last year's media day was held, the Big 12 wasn't even an inkling. Like there was no conversation about it because it wasn't. Yeah, I mean, Texas and OU had not made their decision yet, so it was truly a typical independence media day last year. So much happened in the 3 to 4 months after media day that makes this one look entirely different. But I don't know that it'll be as newsy a day as we've hoped for it to be in the past, because, like you said, the news has already been made. The news tomorrow is the steps toward transition and the fact that you can now say you've ridden out this independence era on a largely successful, record. The Bronco days brought BYU in. The Kalani days will bring BYU up. But there were a lot of double-digit win seasons in those independent schedules which were always front loaded, very, very challenging. I think BYU did as much as it could do as an FBS independent, was probably as equipped as any program in the country to succeed with the challenges they had. So I think job well done to get to this point, and really continuing job well done for Tom to pare down the future schedules, because they had to go from load to cut. And they've been able to do it more or less successfully. And so kudos to Tom in a lot of ways for that. But I just think back on all the great crowds BYU got to play in front of in different places of the country they wouldn't normally go to. The fact that during this time, although they weren't officially recognized as a P5, other P5 leagues began to kind of look at BYU as a P5 caliber program in terms of their scheduling quota, right? Because they had to play so many P5 teams out of league, and they said, well, we're going to count BYU in that group. And that was kind of a pat on the back at the time that you're doing a good job as an independent. And so I think, again, all things considered, they sailed through it about as well as they possibly could.
Full staff and players and coaches tomorrow. You guys are all going to be in Royal. What are we expecting tomorrow? That's like half the thing now.
I think
it's like
Royal,
the gear.
I think Royal's the mode tomorrow. And yeah, they're bringing a ton. Like I said, every coach and like around 30 players, so more than 40 players and coaches will be here. And there will be some names from the past who've been kind of bouncing around town this week. Some pretty big names that might show up in a program here or there. I know that you guys and others will have a lot of coverage from tomorrow. I'll have our 2-hour radio show with Riley Nelson on BYU Radio. 4 hours of live BYU TV shows will be on ESPN3 to supplement the coverage. So it's a big blowout, and we'll get a lot of national play before BYU becomes one of 14 teams wading its way through media days next year in Texas, it looks like.
Looking forward to it, Greg. We'll talk to you tomorrow, and we'll catch up there, and then we'll get down to business. It's going to be awesome. Thanks for joining us today, man.
We'll look for you then. Always a pleasure. And, yeah, the football season for BYU is 74 days from today.
The old countdown. We love it. All right, Greg, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you again. We're coming back. More to go here on the program. When we return, I've got some of those comments that you may not have gotten from Ryan Smith about the Utah Jazz and about whether or not that coaching search, if he's dipping in on that coaching search himself, if the Jazz are looking for a draft pick. Speaking of draft, we're going to be at Wallabies at the District in South Jordan on Thursday for draft night. Now, the Jazz don't have a draft pick, but that's where we're at right now, is that I think there might be, if there's some fireworks, we're going to be there. Either way, we're going to be there, but you're going to get our show, and then right at 6 o'clock, Coach Tim Lacombe, Jake Scott, Ben Anderson all hanging out as well at Wallabies there at the District in South Jordan. We'll take a break. Many thanks to Greg Rebell for joining us today. Looking forward to tomorrow, BYU's Media Day, their final year of independence in their BYU football Media Day. So we'll come back. More to go right here on the program. It's 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone right here. It's Unrivaled.
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.